Hello, lovelies, and welcome back to another week of the podcast. This episode, I interview Michaela Deerdorf, and there's no question in my mind but that Michaela is an artist. And we'll get into that a little more deeply as we progress into the episode. I don't want to ruin anything, but Michaela has a pretty profound story of growing up in what she termed a cult, or what she terms a cult, and the revelation that happened when she journeyed to France and she realized that maybe she needed to reconsider or rethink some ways of her being in the world. Her story is a fascinating one, and one that I think you all will appreciate. I think we all find ourselves in certain points of our lives. We look at what we're doing, we look at where we are, and we realize, maybe this isn't where I'm supposed to be. And then begins the real work, right? Of trying to figure out what direction we should go. Well, Michaela has done that and continues to do that. She has a really fun podcast called Philosophy, and she does not take herself too seriously. She says it's about philosophy and feminism with people from all walks of life, and she and her guests, they keep it silly and heartfelt. And I don't know about you, but I love all things silly, and I've listened to a few episodes, and it's absolutely worth the listen. And then as well, Michaela tells a story of magic and miracle, and one that she's experienced time and again in her life, and the fact that it's been so profound for her that she wants to talk about it on this podcast, I think means that all of those moments were truly special for her. So let's get to it. Let's get to this next episode and my interview with Michaela Deerdorf.
Let me paint you a picture. You're at a youth church conference. You are 12, 13, 14 years old. You're with hundreds of other kids, and the worship band comes on. They're really cool. They look really cool. They sound really cool. They're playing cool instruments. They're dressed cool. They have the coolest shoes, hair, everything. They, you know, you look on stage and you realize, like, oh, they're a couple. They're married. I want to be just like that couple, like be like a worship team powerhouse. Like, I want to be just like that speaker who came on and talked about, you know, how they overcame their sin, and the lights turn down and the temperature cools and there's lights that are hitting the fog that they've produced in the room.
As a human being?
I wish I knew. I think it's always changing, but at my core, I feel like some underlying things are always present, and that is, you know, I'm a daughter, I'm a wife, I'm a dog mom, I'm a friend, I'm a student of life. And that sounds so corny, but when I left college, I was like, I don't want to stop learning. And when I was in college, I didn't really appreciate the, you know, opportunity to learn. So I would say I'm all those things, but I'm also, you know, tired today. But yesterday I wasn't as tired. And tomorrow I have, you know, an interview and I'm going to be a nervous wreck, and I am ever changing. Yeah.
Yeah, you and I were talking before, and there's a lot of change in a lot of people's lives because I just moved and I've started a new job. So there's a lot shifting in a lot of people's lives. I just am so curious, what do you do as a vocation? Like, what do you get paid for?
Yeah, so that has been quite a point of, you know, not frustration, but confusion for me for the past couple of years. So again, after I left college, not left, but graduated, after I graduated 2.5 years ago, I am 24. I've been running a photography business since I was 17. And that ebbs and flows as any creative endeavor or business is, you know, it some months there is a lot of income and then there's sometimes where there won't be anything for a while. And that's really frustrating when you are trying to provide for yourself and be, you know, an equal partner in your marriage and super supportive husband who is just incredibly into everything that I do and is so, you know, he's always cheering me on, my biggest fan. But photography really has been my mode of income. And my goal is to, you know, get paid to be a singer and an actress. But those are really, really hard industries to break into. So that's why you see so many creative people who are, you know, serving or bartending. And I just, you know, I have so much respect for the food industry, food and beverage industry. I have lots of friends who work in the food and beverage industry in many different ways. But I just don't want to go back to that. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to do photography. But lately I've been thinking, wow, it's a lot of pressure to be your own boss. It's a lot of pressure to be making all the decisions and to be your biggest motivator because there's no motivation to like get up and go at a certain time. And there's no separation of work-life balance when you decide when you're working. So as silly as it sounds, because most people probably dream of being their own boss, I kind of am looking for something more structured. So yeah, I have like a job interview tomorrow. I've been applying for jobs. I still want to do my photography and videography, but really I want something that's going to fuel my passions, going to let me, you know, be able to afford producing my music and traveling with my husband and seeing the world. So long answer, but that's kind of it. Yeah, it was needed. In Columbus, Ohio. I love Columbus. I'm a Columbus apologist fan. Ohio gets really drug through the mud, and for good reason. There's a lot of racism and corn and like actual corn. I'm not kidding about that. There's a lot of, you know, country vibes, I guess is the good is the word, small towns, but I'm, you know, there's a lot of beauty in that too in a lot of ways. If anyone else listening grew up in a small town, they understand the push and pull of loving it and hating it. But we have moved to Columbus and we really, really, really like the city of Columbus, the food scene, the beer and coffee scene. There's a lot of fun things, lots of young families, and it's really developing. But also don't move here because I don't want my rent to increase anymore. Thank you.
Well, and I think a lot of places in the U.S., right, are having that issue of becoming sought after, becoming popular. I mean, the last year and a half I lived in Santa Fe, I could no longer afford to live there. And mm-hmm. so I just house sat for a year and a half. And so, this is a whole other podcast episode. This is a whole other issue. But what are we going to do when yeah. people can no longer afford to live in the places where they are expected to show up and work mm-hmm. for those who are wealthy, you know, because it's very quickly becoming almost like a master and slave state in this country where all the wealthy people are pricing yes. their servants out, the people they expect to serve them, you know, whether it's the restaurants or the coffee shops or the laundromat or the dry cleaner, we're rapidly yes. becoming kind of the servants of those with money. And I think and we have yes. to maybe sometimes travel half an hour to an hour for our jobs because we can no longer afford. We've been priced out of those other places. But that's a whole other podcast. I loved that you led exactly. with racism and corn. Mm-hmm. I find that utterly fascinating. I guess maybe those things go together, but I love that that was your go-to. I do want to ask you, I originally found you have this really provocative and for me, very fun title of your own podcast called Philosophy. How did you come up with this podcast? How did you decide that this was something that you wanted to talk about?
So I have this best friend, her name is Maddie, and we grew up together. We have known each other since we were 10. And she was my maid of honor in my wedding. And she now lives across the country, but we are still best friends. And we keep in touch. And a lot of that is because of the podcast. We started the podcast together. We both dreamed of podcasting. We both started listening to podcasts in college. I feel like the age people start listening to podcasts is usually around like 16 to 18 years old, you know, usually not a thing you sit down and are disciplined to listen to younger than that. But I found myself listening to podcasts a lot on my commute to college because I lived at home my first 2 years of college and drove 45 minutes every day there and back. And then once I met my husband, I was driving 45 minutes, then an hour to Columbus and then back home. So I was doing a lot of driving and I was like, okay, I need to stay awake somehow. Got to listen to some podcasts. Wow, it'd be so cool if I had my own podcast someday. Never had the guts to do it. And then Maddie said she wanted to, and I was like, let's just do it together. It'll be a great way for us to bond and stay together and keep in touch when you move, because we knew that she'd be moving at that point. And we did the podcast for 100 episodes together, almost 2 years. And it was really fun. And we learned a lot about each other and ourselves and changed so much. Yeah. Love her dearly. So she's no longer on the podcast because she is setting out to write a book. And, you know, she's a first grade teacher and she does all this really cool stuff. And I support her in all of her creative endeavors. But I was like, I'm going to keep doing the podcast. And she's super supportive. So that's kind of how the podcast started. And as far as the name goes, like I said, like when I was done with college, I then started to appreciate education and understanding humanity. And at the same time, I was like leaving organized religion. I grew up very religious in the evangelical Christian church. And I was like, okay, I want to learn more. And I always tell the story of the fact that I had an ex in high school when I was really young. I was like 16 and he went off to college and studied philosophy. And I was like, that's weird. That's evil. That's crazy. That's an evil thing to study. Cause at the time I was like super, super Christian, super close-minded, super uneducated, really, for lack of better words. And I grew up and realized, oh, philosophy is literally just talking about the human existence. Like, how cool is that? And I think it's a really interesting segue to go from talking like, you know, religion and then moving on to philosophy, because it's not like an organized thing that you meet up with people to discuss necessarily, but it is another way to kind of ground yourself and think about humanity in a different way. So I was like, well, it'd be really cool to talk about philosophical things in the podcast. I'm no philosopher, I'm no expert, but it'd be really cool to like have those kinds of conversations. That was important to us, but it was also important for it to be feminine and female. And so I thought, okay, Philosophy, and that's our name. So our first season together was really, really great. It was, you know, 100 episodes. We talked about pop culture, female issues, growing up, being in your 20s, leaving the church. We talked about a bunch of stuff. We had a few guests, and it was great. And now the second season that I'm doing by myself has a different format. And it's more so interviewing guests. I want it to be a platform where I can learn, because again, I'm no expert. I have so much to learn. I want to be the bridge between people who want to learn and people who can teach. So I've had some psychologists come on, a connection expert, sociology experts, different people from all walks of life. I just interviewed someone who makes a young female around my age who makes clothing for people in psychiatric facilities and rehab facilities so that they don't have to wear those paper scrubs. I'm very excited to release that episode. We have a really small listening base. So if you're listening to this podcast, definitely go check us out, subscribe, support. I guess it's just me now. I say us, but I guess me and all my guests, but...
know, did you grow up in a religious household? You've already talked about that, but what did that look like for you?
I used to be really bitter towards the fact that I grew up in a religious household. Once, you know, I figured out, oh, this was actually kind of messed up. And it's no shade to my parents whatsoever. My parents are just a product of their environment. They were conditioned to think a certain way, and they did their very best, and they raised me and my brother. And I love them. I have a great relationship with my parents, and I do not blame them by any means. So I want to put that out there. It's more so the structure of religion that I was raised in. So like I said, evangelical Christian, I grew up in a what is called like a Grace Brethren church. There's lots of them around the country, lots of them in Ohio. And my husband actually grew up in a very similar church. So it was nice to share those commonalities and relate with our lowercase and capital T trauma. Although his story is wild in itself, and that's his to tell. But I grew up going to youth group from a very young age. Again, most of this came from the actual experience in like a church building and like church events and not like my home. So I'm grateful for that. Two very supportive, very accepting parents. And they, again, are religious and they're Christian. But this was something that I experienced, you know, in the actual building. And I luckily never faced any of the, you know, physical abuse that I've heard comes from a lot of different Christian spheres. And I'm very grateful for that. But, you know, verbal things and experiences for sure. For example, just, you know, the classic separation of boys and girls, and the girls get a whole different talk about sex and purity and abstinence and, you know, the naughty word of masturbation and all these things that they make you feel so shameful about. And then the guys are like, yeah, don't look at girls. They'll, you know, they'll tempt you. Okay, let's go play some kickball. Like that kind of idea. And then like, you know, being at church camp and being told like, you need to cover up your whole body basically, so that you're not tempting the boys. But the boys were running around in these skimpy little like swim trunks, just lots of double standards, and just being taught that like, if my partner wants to have sex with me before marriage, then they don't love me. And, you know, your place as a woman in the marriage is to support your husband and please him. And like all these like classic patriarchal Christian values and just lots of like Christian nationalism ideas or Christian nationalist ideas were pumped into me as a child. I lived and breathed. I was told all of these things at a very impressionable age, and so was Maddie, who I did my podcast with previously. She grew up in the same church as me, so we shared a lot of that. But it's just wild. I didn't really realize how cultish it was until I you know, went to college. It was actually on a mission trip to France that I realized, oh wow, we're doing this wrong. Like I said, it was a mission trip, but we traveled to France and primarily cooked for people. We never like, quote unquote, shared the gospel. We just cooked for people. We served people. And to me, the Jesus that I had been taught about, that's what he would do. The Jesus I was taught about, he wouldn't be telling gay people that they're going to hell. He wouldn't be, you know, restricting people of life-saving healthcare. He wouldn't be telling people what to do with their bodies in any way. You know, he wouldn't be hating certain oppressed groups of people. He wouldn't be racist. You know, all these like bad things that I see from the people who claim to love Jesus are just, it's all the opposite of what this guy they explain would actually do. So it was just a lot of, you know, confirmation bias when I was in this small community, because everyone around me was also Christian. They were thinking the same way as me. And I had a few friends growing up that weren't Christian, but most of the people around me thought the same way as me. And I really think it's important for people to, again, communicate with one another, experience different things, travel, see the world. And that's why I loved hearing your story so much, because you really were exposed to so much at such a young age. I can't even imagine, because all I knew until the age of 18 was small Christian town. This is what we live by. This is what you were supposed to believe. And this is just how we do things.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, on that trip to France, it sounds like you had some sort of breakthrough or revelation about your relationship to your religion. I mean, that must have been, I don't know, was that liberating or was it heartbreaking?
It was really scary. I actually remember there was this whole talk around like spiritual warfare, right? In the Christian spheres, it's referring to like when you feel like the devil is, you know, trying to tempt you or something. Yeah, I don't even know. Like, I don't know. There's different talk around it, but basically spiritual warfare. And I remember being on the plane, like flying into Lyon, and I was like, my stomach kind of hurts. I'm really nervous. I'm scared. And I credited it to like spiritual warfare. Like, this is me landing on the battlefield. I'm going to fight for what's right. I'm going to tell everybody about Jesus. This is my meaning, my purpose. But looking back, I was just anxious because I'd never been in Europe before. I was scared. I had been on a really long flight and hadn't stretched my legs. I probably had to pee. I was looking down at a foreign city that I'd never seen before. And I was like, yep, this is spiritual warfare. And I was exhausted for the next day. And I'm like, oh my gosh, God is testing me. This is, you know, Satan is trying to break down these walls. No, it was jet lag. Like, I was just like telling myself all these things and giving myself to ego that I was going to come help people. But no, that's white saviorism. Like that's me believing that I have so much of a purpose in this religion that I am like above other people. And that's just the furthest from the truth. So when I got there and saw that we would be like working out in the garden really hard on really hot days, and one of the hottest summers recorded in France, I believe it was 112 degrees on a couple of the days. And we were, you know, cooking in a kitchen for like 40 women that were at the chateau for a quilting camp with no air conditioning. And we were making these like decadent, gorgeous French meals for them, which is really cool to learn how to cook. But it was, you know, really hot. And we were cooking from sun up to sundown because we would cook them breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, all this stuff. And we'd get off, quote unquote, work at like 9, and we'd like ride our bikes to McDonald's and get a McFlurry or something, you know. It was really fun. But as I was experiencing this, and from the years I've been home from that trip, it was just a month, it was really short, I have learned so much. And the people I met there met me with nothing but love and compassion and patience and understanding. And I like had my first alcoholic beverage at a church event. And it wasn't judgmental or weird. It was just like a fun social thing. You know, the drinking age is much younger there. I went to this like monastery and experienced like a different kind of Christianity. And it was just, I saw that my little bubble was, you know, this little safety net that I had been in for years, and saw that, you know, making rules for people isn't loving. Loving people is loving. Meeting them where they're at and helping them is love. How people should live based on your personal belief isn't love. And I feel like that was a really good example of that there, when I was able to just like make food for people and be kind to people. And yeah, so it's really quite simple, but it's hard to execute. I went over on this mission trip by myself and met some people there. I met two girls. Ironically, I got paired with another girl from Ohio, and then another girl that I met there, her grandparents, she's a dual citizen of France and America, and her grandma actually lives like 20 minutes from my hometown. Very small world. But I got really close with those ladies and still keep in touch with them every once in a while. But yeah, it was like a small group of us just cooking. And anyways, yeah, it's just it really opened my eyes, and I could see that the structure that I'd been raised in was very, very rigid, and not as rigid as some. Don't get me wrong. I'm grateful that I wasn't raised in an even more strict environment, but yeah.
So I just think it's what a powerful place to have this kind of breaking open, this revelation while you're serving people, right? While you're being of service. I mean, I can't even imagine growing up in a family like that. You use the word cult. I can't imagine growing up in a social and cultural context like that, and then having this experience in France that kind of shifts your entire worldview. And then you're brave enough to hold it in your heart and start questioning the world and your place in it. And I think that is, it just speaks volumes to your spirit, you know, how courageous your spirit is.
Thank you. Yeah, I do not feel courageous by any means, but I really appreciate that. And that view of it, I don't use the word cult lightly either. I think it can be a jarring word to hear, especially when you're in that structure, because so many people in, you know, Ohio really are Christian, and they grow up in very similar ways. But it wasn't until I read the book Cultish by Amanda Montell, who also has a podcast called Cultish, that I saw all of the parallels to, you know, how I grew up. And I'm not trying to offend anybody by saying that. I think that if you want to have your faith and your religion and, you know, Christianity, I think that's great for you. I think that if there's any way you can find peace in the universe and with yourself, and you can connect with God in that way, that's great. But my problem is when you start using your personal beliefs to make rules for other people, and you use your personal beliefs to be an excuse for hatred, that's when it's, you know, not okay. But I want to just like really make it clear. It's not your faith that's wrong, because you should be able to, you know, worship whoever you want, you know, live in whatever way you want.
Well, I think, you know, you and I had a conversation before this because I was a guest on your podcast, but I think what's really interesting is, right, there are kind of two ways of being in the world, right? You can be open to the world and open to the magic and possibility, open to experience, open to meeting other people, open to new ideas, or you can be closed in because the world's a scary place, or you need more certainty about what's going to happen in your day or in your relationships. You can be inward facing, which I think a lot of religious institutions and cults are, or you can be outward facing in relationship to the world. And to go from being inward facing to outward facing is a super scary process. And I think a lot of people in a lot of communities, a lot of groups, they view the world as a really scary place, right? Because it is. It is for a lot of people. But I think there is a lot of danger in continuously and eternally being inward facing, because I think things get stagnant then. I think it inhibits new thought. I think it really encourages rigidity. I think it encourages, you know, circular thinking in which nothing new can really enter, and you just self-ratify your beliefs, confirmation bias that you talked about before. And for me personally, I think it's more exciting to be outward facing because I'm all about the adventure. I'm all about believing in people and trusting people, but more importantly, trusting God, trusting that universal spirit, trusting creator, that energy is going to bring beauty and grace into my life. But that's just my attitude about it.
And that's beautiful. Yeah, I love that. That's how it should be. I love that. I feel like admitting that you're wrong, or admitting that you don't see the big picture, or admitting that you have lots to learn is the most important aspect of living. I think that a lot of people fail to question what they believe because of pride, and I know that it can lead to a lot of different, you know, insecurities, but that is really scary. I remember going to bed one night and some turmoil in my life had happened, small, you know, not crazy, but, you know, I was just upset and I was going to bed and my husband had already fallen asleep after, you know, we talked and it wasn't between he and I, but he was like comforting me. And then, you know, I was left with my own thoughts after he fell asleep. And I was thinking, like, I was going to pray. And again, prayer is not wrong or stupid or invalid by any means, because I still pray in a way. But I remember going to pray and thinking, like, oh, I don't even know who I'm talking to at this point, because the person I had like drawn in my head of like Jesus Christ my whole life, who I'd been talking to, I don't believe in anymore. So then it's like, but I still believe in something bigger than myself, right? So that was wild going from that switch. So yeah, it's a really scary process, and I can see why people don't want to step out of their comfort zone. It's sometimes the only thing that people have to like ground them and keep them from jumping off the deep end with anxiety and depression. Like, I get that. So, and I'm happy for you if you, you know, have that particular relationship with, you know, religion, and I respect it all.
And I think that those are the key words. I respect it all. I love that. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the main question on my podcast is, I would love for you to share a story or stories where you feel like you witnessed something magical or miraculous in your life. And then just talk about how it changed you, because those things always change us. Inevitably, they always change us. So I'd love to hear whatever you have to share.
So mine is probably a little different than what you're used to hearing. It's not a like spiritual story where I encountered like a ghostly figure or anything. Unfortunately, I haven't experienced anything cool like that, but, you know, hopeful. I'm just kidding. Hopeful for the future. I'm just kidding. Something I wanted to talk about was the experience of collective effervescence. I feel like when I was in it, I don't know, it all ties into my experience in the church, unfortunately or fortunately, just because that's so deeply ingrained into who I am and my identity or previous identity. But the idea of collective effervescence when you, well, let me back up. Let me paint you a picture. You're at a youth church conference. You are 12, 13, 14 years old. You're with hundreds of other kids and the worship band comes on. They're really cool. They look really cool. They sound really cool. They're playing cool instruments. They're dressed cool. They have the coolest shoes, hair, everything. They, you know, you look on stage and you realize like, oh, they're a couple. They're married. I want to be just like that couple, like be like a worship team powerhouse. Like I want to be just like that speaker who came on and talked about, you know, how they overcame their sin and the lights turn down and the temperature cools and there's lights that are hitting the fog that they've produced in the room. And you get goosebumps because you look around and everybody is worshiping Jesus. This was my experience. Again, Jesus was, you know, who we worship. And I, you know, had the urge to like raise my hands and worship and lift my hands in the air, and or some people would get down on their knees and, you know, let the spirit lead you. And that was an interesting experience because I never quite really like, I never quite felt like that was the natural thing to do, but everybody else around me was doing it, so I was doing it. And I, you know, the goosebumps, the feeling of looking around, getting so emotional to see everybody like worshiping Jesus. And then I realized, you know, after I left the church, that was collective effervescence. That was a feeling that you experience when you're together with other people in a big setting like that, when you're all experiencing something. It can happen at concerts. It can happen when you like witness a flash mob, or when you see somebody propose on a crowded beach and everybody claps for them, or when your kid wins an award at a ceremony, or you see your little brother graduate high school and everybody's cheering for him when they announce his name, or everybody throws their caps and gowns. Like, these experiences happen all the time. Or like when you're on an airplane and everyone claps when you land. Like, those little like feelings are spiritual for sure, but not in the way that I thought they were. It's spiritual in the way that we're all part of this like heartbeat of the world. We all have a little tiny piece and responsibility to be the best that we can be for each other. We need to show up for each other. And, you know, when we're in those spaces, enjoy every moment of it, because it's very rare. You know, it doesn't happen every week. You don't experience collective effervescence every week unless you're like an avid rager concert goer and you're like appearing at all these like events, like, and you just like chase that high. And if that's the case, then I adore you. And I think that's amazing, because I wish I could do that every week. But it's really, collective effervescence is that feeling I was chasing for so long that I didn't realize I didn't need this organized religious structure to experience.
Okay, first of all, those terms, collective effervescence, need to be used every single day because they are so beautiful together. And I feel like we need to create a community online called Collective Effervescence, because we just need more effervescence in the world. And I always hear that word effervescence and I think of bubbles and how they kind of collect on the side of a glass and they go upwards and they just float and pop up and who knows, go out into the universe. There's just something inextricably gorgeous about that term. I think you've just rocked my world with that term. I've never heard it before. I mean, I've heard collective and I've heard effervescence separately, but I've never heard them together. But holy cannoli.
And just, who knows? Maybe there's a better term for it, but I love that one.
No, it's just astonishing. And, you know, I had a podcast earlier, Reverend Julie Hoplamazian, and she talked about this really interesting thing working with kids with music. And the kids were all chaotic. They're all on drums and doing other things. And then one day, magically, her miracle story was mysteriously, magically, one day all those kids came together, and in this hyper real moment, all of them started playing these instruments and drums seamlessly, and they created this piece of music. Whereas before there was just chaos, you know, just everybody doing their own thing, they all came together in this really interesting moment where they created this gorgeous piece of music, not planned, not scripted. And it sounds a little bit like what you're talking about.
Yeah. Music is so important. Doesn't even feel like the correct word. Music is so pertinent to our existence. I feel we've had music since the dawn of time. Different forms or fashions. I really believe that it is one of the coolest creative acts that we can do as people. And I've always been drawn to music from a young age and still am. Again, I had mentioned like it would be a dream that my full-time career would be like a singer-songwriter. But like no matter what, I've just been, you know, drawn to that. And I have learned that not everybody is connected to it the way that I am, but it is a powerful thing that can bring people together nonetheless. And you can even look at like Alzheimer's patients. They won't remember much at all, or dementia. They won't remember much at all, maybe not even their kids' names, but when you hum or sing a song to them from their childhood, they usually will remember and either sing along or hum along or tap along and remember that, because music transcends so many things that we do. And I actually had, me idolizing those worship leaders on stage, you know, encouraged me and inspired me to become a worship leader myself. And so I led worship on stage for years and years. And when I left the church, it was really hard because my relationship with music was stunted. I felt like I had lost part of me because my identity had been so wrapped up in specifically worship like Christian music. And I was always told, like, if you're making music and you're not making it for God, then like, why are you even making music? Like, what's the point? Like, your purpose on earth is to make music that elevates Jesus Christ. Why would you make secular music? It's not of God. So that was drilled so heavy into my head that like, I literally haven't released music in 4 years, but I'm so excited because I'm going to be releasing a song next month or maybe August. I'm very excited. It's a song that I wrote when I was younger, so it definitely still has those like more adolescent vibes and definitely isn't the exact direction that I want to take my music. Think like, you know, Renee Rapp, Chapel Roan vibes. I really like their music, but I just need to get this song off my chest because it's about like a friendship breakup and it's one that has been, you know, stewing for a while. I just need to put it out in the world and give it to other people to listen to. So it's not just on my conscience alone. But yeah, I would love to start putting out music again. And my biggest reason for finding a different job is so that I can just have money to spend on creating music. If I can make one person feel the way I do when I listen to songs, then I've done my job. Like, there are some songs that I can listen to on repeat and just like weep because of the way that it's composed and the lyrics and the melody. And sometimes it's music that doesn't even have words. It's special, no doubt. I think that that's probably the most spiritual experience I've ever had. It's just like listening to music.
I hope you all enjoyed this next installment of the podcast, and I hope you enjoyed meeting my guest, Michaela. I loved talking to her and finding out more about her and her journey. To find out more about the work she's doing in the world and to jump in to her podcast, Philosa She, there will be a link in the episode show notes. Click on it and dive on in. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening and for writing me reviews and leaving ratings. But as usual, I always am asking for more. Please do consider, if you are a first-time listener, leaving a little rating or writing a little review. You have no idea how much those ratings and reviews help me and help others find the podcast. I want to remind everyone that I do have a new YouTube channel. Please do look at the episode show notes, click on that little YouTube link, and there you will see my guests' shining faces and their sparkling eyes. And it's just another layer of getting to know the people that appear on this podcast. So check it out. I'm sure you will love it. And then for those of you who don't know, I do still have my Patreon, and I'm always looking for more supporters. I'm ever so grateful for the ones I have, but as usual, this work does cost me money, and I would so love to have subscribers and supporters who help put this content out into the world. There will be a link to my Patreon in the episode show notes, and for $3 a month, $5 a month, or $10 a month, you can help make this podcast a reality in the world. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Michaela. Have an open heart, as well as an open mind. I think that trip to France did change her heart and mind. But what was it? Was it the cooking of delicious French food? Or was it meeting new friends? Or just being in a totally different country? All of these things could have changed her mind or changed her heart as far as where she wanted to be in the world with respect to worshiping her God. I think Michaela has a really big open heart. And so I'm going to encourage each and every one of you to think about your heart. And how is it in the world? Is it open?
Is it ready for adventure? Is it ready and excited to learn new things? Is your heart endlessly curious? Be like Michaela, have an open heart, have a curious heart. And I suspect that sooner rather than later, adventure will find you before you know it. See you next week for another episode of the podcast and another amazing human being sharing a story of incredible magic.